Audio Gravity, 16th of October 2009. Good morning. How are you doing? First link today is over on, let's just pull it up, over on minainfra.com. It's not actually how you say it. Minainfra.com, MENAINFRA. I don't know if you know, but I'm sort of always looking into ways of new infrastructure being built, and by that I mean hotels and big sort of industrious eco-sustainability units, mainly because I like the idea of living in a building that's, you know, a bit more friendly to the environment, creates its own power, has sustainable like rooftop green areas, all that sort of stuff, because I like the idea of fusing various things together. I like the idea of not just making digital mashups, but making also things that are multifunctional, and that instead of just being a flat or a house or a building, you know, they the designers, the creativity side of it, and the engineers actually build in these additional features instead of it just being a one-shot build. And so I tend to have a look around for stuff like to do with construction, and ever since going to Dubai, I'm always looking into what they're doing in Dubai, because they spend a hell of a lot of money in infrastructure. You know, you've got this place in the middle of Nowheresville, surrounded by sand, and then there's this city in the middle of it all with this sort of, you know, overblown, spent amount of wealth with all these mega skyscrapers and structures. And think of what you will about, you know, the Middle East and the absolute, you know, spending of stupid amounts of money on these buildings and the environmental damaging effects of that. Think what you will about that. You can't help, I can't help, from a creative viewpoint, think of how amazing it is that they're actually, you know, investing time and energy and human power to build this sort of stuff. Obviously, where there's money, people are gonna go and work, but there's a website, this website called Mina Infra. It's about all the latest infrastructure from Dubai. So there's a whole bunch of stuff in there. But it's mainly Middle East. I say Dubai, it's construction news for the Middle East. So they posted a link the other day about new super hotel to cheapen the Hajj. So they're looking at building this luxurious hotel for all the people in Mecca. So that they can, because of the pilgrimage to Mecca traditionally, they see lots of people going there, and they've started to think about, well, maybe it'd be a good idea to have like a mega hotel or a hotel that can be there for everybody to use. So basically, the pilgrimage to Mecca traditionally sees Muslims traveling to the holy sites, foregoing worldly possessions, thoughts, and activities in order to focus on their faith. However, the Makkah Clock Tower Royal Hotel, part of the Seven Tower Abjin Halbeit complex, will give those who can afford its creature comforts while they perform the fifth pillar of Islam. Boasting the world's largest clock, 4.7 times larger than Big Ben's on each side, the 1,591-foot tall hotel, which, by the way, they seem to build these things mega, mega tall. It's some sort of statement. Where are we? Will be among the world's second tallest tower, estimated to cost $3 billion. The hotel will feature 24-hour butler service, segregated gyms, beauty parlors, grooming salons, a spa, and a chocolate room where chefs will prefer bespoke pralines and truffles. I mean, it's just—it's the height of decadence, isn't it? Really, but I have these visions of all these mega expressions of humankind all over the globe, you know, and just being empty. Eventually in the future, you'll look at something like this in the future, and if something happens to our civilization, you know, what happens when it restarts again and people start to document these mega structures that are just standing there? And especially with somewhere like Dubai, you know, you've got this mega Burj Dubai, which is just looks like something out of Half-Life, just standing there in the middle of the desert. And I just picture it 100, 200 years in the future. Just this, you know, chrome concrete monster poking out of the desert, and then people just coming across it and thinking, what the hell were they thinking? What is this a statement about? It's a great site. You should keep an eye on this site, because they do release a lot of information about buildings in the Middle East, and they also break it down in that Web 2 style of, you know, various bits and pieces like little graphic demographics, if you like, graphical demographics. I don't know what you call them, in a Web 2 style, which is quite nice. Next link today is over on nerdmodo.com. Can spy satellites read your car number plate? So basically, this guy has put a blog post together regarding if it's possible to get your number plate read from space. And he's saying that most modern-day spy satellites have highest resolutions around 10 centimetres, and even that's not enough to read a newspaper headline. But this guy goes into breaking it down into terms of, you know, aperture and sine waves and all sorts of stuff. But he gives a really, really good description of what's possible with 0.1 centimetre satellite technology and what we have at 1 centimetre resolution and what there is today at 10 centimetres. And it's just a really well thought out blog post. Probably useless information, but it's good to store in the back of your mind for those late night pub competitions. Next link today is public911.com/911. This is 911 calls on a map in real time. Now, they don't really go into how they're doing this. I presume they are scraping, and by that I mean they're looking at a web page where updates are posted in real time. They're taking them off that site, and then they're using that data to build Google Map location data, which they drop on the map. But this is this and a number of other Gmail projects have sparked the idea for the conquer2.com geo media map, but we're using it to grab different geo data from media makers who are at a place or a venue, and it literally updates the map to suit. We haven't come up with a really nice UI yet to cope with the real time perspective of it, because we don't know how that's going to look. But it's nice to see other sites that are doing stuff like this. I don't know if this is just more cool, or if it's just, you know, if this is where things are going to head towards. You literally have be able to set certain permissions when you want to be updated or when you want to be interrupted, when something's nearby in a radius or something. But it's great. It's great that people are making little mashups like this. Next link today is over on inhabit.com, a design that will save the world. One of my favorite eco sustainability habitation sites. They have some incredible design concepts on there. This is the top five incredible eco hotels and hostels of the world. So the first one is this just this massive 767 called the Jumbo Hostel. And I'm trying to think where it's at. I knew where it was at before, but I can't remember where it was now. It's just outside of an airport. I think it's Sweden, maybe. It's not actually showing me on the list here. The other one that's very interesting to me, and I'd love to go down and see it, is this real massive steel construction site in Uxbridge, UK. And I think this is near Heathrow. What they've done is they've took shipping containers and they have done the shipping containers out to be rooms, and then they stack them on this steel assembly grid, which makes, you know, running a hotel and the maintenance and the upkeep and the build of a hotel a lot cheaper. And it's a 307 room version at Heathrow, saving up to £10 million, $18.6 million. Once it's built, the Heathrow shipping container motel will make the perfect first night stop for a green traveller on the move. Beautiful looking place in terms of how they've gone about the construction. I'd love to go down to Uxbridge and see it, actually. Next link today is the new tech TriCast America tour called Stream or Die. Now, if you've not heard about this yet or you've not seen it, this is a very similar idea that I had probably about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and that was not as good as this, of course, and that was to drive a Mini across around the coastline of the US. It was a two-part project. It was going to be originally, we would put a Mini in a container on a ship, and we would export that Mini to America, and it would take 30 days to get to America. We would have one person on the boat travel with the Mini, and they will update every single day for 30 days their experiences of being on this big cargo container and what it's like to be at sea for 30 days and be disconnected as such from the outside world and only have this satellite link. And then once the cargo ship had arrived, after about a week of dealing with sort of paperwork and checking over the car, then the other person would join that person after 30 days and see what it was like to have this sort of contrast of personalities, contrasts of viewpoints. You've got one person who's just been traveling segregated from the world, if you like, for 30 days, and you've got this other person who's sort of excited that they're driving across the country, and watched the sort of mix of emotions between what it meant to be on that boat for 30 days without sort of creature comforts, and then also a person to sort of talk about that stuff as you're driving across, and film it all. You know, literally have a webcam on the back or one of these 360 degree remote control turnable cameras so that people control it for a certain amount of time, and then at the end of the mission, that's how I'm looking at it. It's a bit of a mission. At the end of it, you would just raffle the car off for charity. And I just thought it would be really, really good. It wasn't going to be a new shape Mini like the New Tech one, but an old shape Mini. But anyway, I've gone off the topic. They've built a high-definition live production vehicle. They've spent a lot of money on this. It's got this big chocking satellite dish on top of it. And they've got two units in the back, these XD300s. And they can do virtual sets, they can do sort of gen lock-in, and they can open up in the middle of nowhere, pretty much, I think, get the satellite to position and basically stream. It doesn't mention on the site, and I'm really looking forward to trying to find some information out about it, but it doesn't say anywhere on the site where how much the actual satellite costs to stream, but I can't imagine it being that cheap. I remember actually meeting Philip Nelson from New Tech at, I think it was Boston, PodCamp Boston 1 or 2, talking to him about the Mini mission across. And it looks like they've actually gone ahead and done it, which is awesome. Finally, last link today is the YouTube bandwidth bill is zero. Welcome to the new net. This was a little report over on Wired's Epicenter. YouTube may pay less to be online than you do. A new report on internet connectivity suggests calling into question a recent analysis arguing Google's popular video service is bleeding money and demonstrating how the internet has continued to morph to fit user behavior. In fact, with YouTube's help, Google is now responsible for at least 6% of internet traffic. I think I reported on that probably a week or 2 weeks ago. But it's supposed to be bringing in quite a lot of it's supposed to be using quite a lot of bandwidth, losing Google $500 million in 2009 as it streamed 75 billion videos. But another report from Arbor Networks suggests that Google's traffic is approaching 10% of the net's traffic, and it's got so much fiber optic cable it is simply trading traffic with no payment involved with the net's largest ISPs. Now this is really, really interesting. So you've got a website that's serving nearly 100 billion videos a year, and it has no bandwidth bill. That is unprecedented. I mean, you would automatically think that to scale a product and to serve that much video up, the whole concept of how much bandwidth used to cost, and now these major companies who have basically made a load of products, and some of them free products, mind, obviously backed up with advertising, have seen that model, you know, be successful for them, and they don't have to go to the main operators, the cable operators, because they were lucky enough, and you know, they had a vision enough to buy up all the black fiber, the cheap fiber, before, you know, the crash, or after the crash, if you like. And lots of fiber companies went to the wall. The major big ones obviously had existing clients, but it enabled these Web2 startups to buy their own cable to be able to do it themselves, and it's quite an amazing and transition to go from having to worry about cost to do with the bandwidth to having this incredible technology which is a fiber, and then only having to update either end of it to have a new box on either end to be able to push that data fast enough. And we live in really interesting times. If you are taking the money aspect away from the actual connectivity, and it comes down to the physical work of either boosting coverage of your product via advertising, or if it comes down to the fact that you're just simply using that as a mechanism to connect people and then paying them for the work at the other end, that opens up a whole new dynamic about exporting and importing people skills, not just products. And I think that we've noticed, you know, in the past 10 years, or I've noticed in the past 10 years, you know, diminishing amount of skills and not skills, but services that we don't export anymore. Like, for instance, you know, steel in Sheffield practically killed that town or that city, because, you know, Japan exports more higher grade quality steel than Sheffield ever could. And yet, you know, the creative sector and the tourism sector of somewhere like London and the power that goes with that, you know, there's a lot of importing and exporting of people skills now in and out of this country to America and to Europe. You know, take India. You've got some incredibly awesome thinking minds there, coders, programmers that are now, you know, all fleeing over to San Francisco and working in San Francisco. It's a massive big cultural shift, and I don't know why I've just gone on one for ages. But that's it for today. I'll speak to you tomorrow. Cheers. Bye.